Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Histories of the Unexpected, the show where we demonstrate that simply everything has its own history, like measles, frogs, and leopards.
Or, true Christmas spirit, holly jolly and iced lolly, or snow dough and roe. That last one doesn't quite work. But, however, we will be following the links in our minds as we come across them, explaining how those histories link together in unexpected ways. Who knew, for example, Sam, who knew that the history of blood, fighting about at the moment, is all about political rhetoric, anti-Semitic propaganda, and the American Red Cross? It's all about World War II. Or that the history of carrots, also about World War II, it's about night vision, victory, alternatives to ice cream. Nothing tastes quite like a carrot on a stick.
Oh, that's very good. The man sitting opposite me is the Time Lord himself. It's the Doctor Who, Doctor What, Doctor When, and Doctor Why, all rolled into one. What do you think of that?
I love it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Christmas special.
Professor extraordinaire of early modern British history at Plymouth University. It's James Daybell. Hello, James.
Hello. Hello, Sam. And I feel really mean with this. I've got... and the man sitting opposite me is the Ebenezer Scrooge of Christmas past himself. It's the famous historical adventurer, Dr. Sam Willis.
I guess fair enough. I am quite miserable most of the time.
You have quite a love-hate relationship with Christmas, don't you?
And with myself.
And with myself.
Which is, I think, comes out a lot at Christmas. I do have a love-hate Christmas relationship for Christmas, which I'm going to be talking a little bit about.
Are you ready for Christmas this year?
How do you measure being ready?
How do I measure being in all manner of ways? In all manner of ways. Is your turkey all primed? Have you pre-cooked stuff? Have you pre-wrapped presents already? All have you bought things?
Okay.
All those kinds of things.
Food and gift-based.
Well, it could be food and gift-based, or is your heart prepared for
that's more like
the family festivities that will ensue?
The history of heart preparation.
Yes.
We should do that.
This year, I was so well prepared in advance that in September, I went to my local butcher and said, can I order a turkey? And he said, sir, I'm afraid you're 2 months too early.
That's good. That's good. So we're doing a Christmas special, aren't we? We did one last year. I very much enjoyed doing it.
And the year before.
There's lots of crazy things that you can... that happen at Christmas that we can talk about.
What left do we have to say about Christmas after two episodes?
I've got a great deal.
I have a great deal.
Yeah.
I think we may have to split this into two.
Okay, well, let's make this
a two-parter.
Christmas special number one. This is probably the Christmas Eve special.
The Christmas Eve podcast. Christmas Eve is very good.
Something like that.
Yes, very good.
In terms of there being two, that's all. And we should do three. We should do three in a row, shouldn't we, really?
Yes, and we're going to do family and friends.
Yes. So we are.
Extras.
This is a dedicated Christmas special, which is so long. I think it's going to be split into two, and then we're doing family and friends as well. So we're doing a trio of Christmas themes, which I'm particularly excited about.
Yes.
The Christmas ones really got me thinking, though, because we wrote our big book, Histories of the Unexpected. Then we're doing our four smaller ones: the Romans, the Tudors, World War II, and the Vikings. And it's extraordinary how often Christmas comes up when you tackle a theme, whatever it might be, or a period. Afresh. It is something that is so obviously shared across time and across people and impacts on people's lives so much that it's very visible in the historical record. And that means that we can cover it from all sorts of interesting and different angles because people wrote about it in different ways.
Yeah. And World War II we're doing at the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a period of rationing, privations, Christmas was something very different. You know, approached very differently with people apart. Think about World War One and Christmas on the on the front.
Yeah,
absolutely. Actually, it's all about carrots.
I was I'm doing some filming and recording with my mate Jim Causley. Hello, Jim. You listening?
Hello, Jim.
The weekend. Who's doing a live tour called the Causley Christmas?
Yes.
And you don't know about this, but he's basically I'm assuming you don't know about this, but he's found loads of extraordinary old folk songs. Basically like pre-carols is the only way I can describe them. Pre-Christmas carols. And it's the first time Father Christmas is mentioned in song. And he's called Sir Christymus.
Sir Christymus.
Which is really good. So anyway, I can't remember why I got
Where could people go and see him?
All over the place. I'm seeing him at Cheriton Fitzpaine on Saturday. But I don't know when this podcast is coming out, so I'm not sure that's going to work.
No. I'm seeing him in the new year. He's coming to somewhere, Star Cross or somewhere around there.
So anyway, I've just become particularly excited about how Christmas appears in song at the moment and how musicians have related to Christmas in the past.
Excellent.
It's all to do with wassailing and joining in. It's a real joining in theme with Christmas.
Christmas carols.
It is Christmas carols. And a lot of the early Christmas songs were, it's all to do with wassailing, which is heating up cider and marching around and singing. And we've talked about wassailing a bit before, but it's kind of a pagan ritual that goes back to the dark times of year. It's to do with darkness. One of the key things about wassails is that they have an easy refrain, a bit like a sea shanty. So they're deliberately designed for people to sing along to. And you can see that reflected in a lot of carols as we know them. Mm. Whether it's O Come All Ye Faithful or whatever it is, they're very well-known songs and they are easy to sing along to by definition. Yeah. So there's part of the hymn in them, but there's part of this very ancient tradition of essentially joining in and having a shout. There's one called the Jacob Stowe Wassail, which I've been listening to, where the chorus is basically, "Way!" And that's it. So there aren't even any words. But you can see people...
It's the kind of wassail that I could join in.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
Angelic voice that I have.
Yeah. So anyway, if everyone's interested, just Google A Causely Christmas and have a look at that. So anyway, we've just touched on joining in, which we weren't expecting to do. Do you want to start, James?
I don't mind. I mean, one of the things I was musing about was how Christmas has changed across the centuries as well. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, fascinating the way in which Christmas was adapted by the Victorians, and you have a very sort of family-centred Christmas. And then by the 20th century, Christmas moves sort of more towards children. So children become the focus of Christmas.
That's interesting.
But very much I suppose the Christ child was always the focus of Christmas, but it became a more of a sort of commercial driven feast that was aimed at providing things for children.
Yeah.
If you think about the changes over the last few years, you think about Christmas cards and the way in which charities basically have a monopoly over Christmas cards nowadays. Think about the way in which people are covering their houses increasingly with loads and loads of lights in competition, which is something that I think has been imported from the US, you know, that kind of tradition.
Do you reckon Edison covered his house in lights?
I imagine he did. I may have mentioned this in previous years, but when I lived in the US, I lived in a little university college town called Mount Pleasant, and there was a man called Mr. Sheehan who lived on a corner. Sheehan was his name,
right.
But he had a corner plot, and it was gated all around, so there was fencing all around. And at Christmas, like about a month before Christmas, and 2 weeks afterwards, he would just coat the entire house in light bulbs and would have all kinds of things. You know, there'd be a sort of Santa house, there'd be sleighs. I mean, literally, it was probably like an acre plot of his private house. He would sit in his summer house, which was a kind of winter house, and as people would wander into his garden, he would come out and give you a candy cane.
Really?
Apologies if I've told you that before.
I don't think you have.
But it is quite extraordinary.
It's got to be linked to the whole history of having rubbish and stuff in your garden like gnomes.
Yes.
Surely, doesn't it?
Yes, I imagine
they're
so.
They're like giant kind of Christmas gnomes.
But I think for him, it's about being, you know, it's about being Mr. Christmas. It's part of community. It's giving something for people to go and see. It's part of, it's you being an important person in the community and being, you know, a focal point of Christmas.
Visibility, isn't it?
Yes.
So you might have this guy who's a bit of a quiet hermit for the rest of the year, and this gives himself a chance literally just to shine.
Yeah. He switched on the town Christmas lights one year.
Wow.
But this was a town that also got me on the radio as a Brit when I first moved over there, and got me to do the advert for their downtown Christmas special.
Right.
In a sort of Dickensian way.
If there was a city that you could turn the Christmas lights on for, James, what would it be?
Somewhere very small. It wouldn't be a city. It would be like a little village. Hmm. And I could, you know, turn it on and then go to the pub for a nice meal and a pint.
Up on the moor somewhere.
Something up on the moor somewhere. Yeah. Or, you know, I think that would be much more pleasurable. So where do we start?
Well, let's just go back quickly, because it's really important what you just said, is that Christmas has changed. So the interesting thing about it, as we see it, is that Christmas is a solid thing in our lives that we come back to once a year, and it's always there, and family have their traditions.
Yes.
Everyone has their own traditions, and those traditions tend to stay. And it's actually, for many people, it's all about doing the same thing again and again.
It's about
and again.
Ritual, isn't it?
It's ritual. It certainly is with my kids. And so it's ironic, or it's certainly surprising, or in fact unexpected, but that actually it has changed. And even if you've got people trying to do the same thing again and again and again, the way humans work with ritual is that they do alter them, they do change it, and that means that Christmas does change, and I think it's massively become fragmented.
Yes.
It's an interesting point, but I'm assuming, this might be wrong, I'm assuming that in the past, in like the 1850s, I'm going to guess,
okay,
there was quite a kind of a structured way of how you did Christmas, which I don't think applies now.
No, it would be different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is more fractured. It's more, people have got their own taste in it, and that's, I do not know or understand the reason for that, but it's, Christmas changes, and that's the whole point about it, I think, now.
Well, one of the things we're trying to do this year is to develop our own family traditions. In previous years, we've gone off to other people's houses, going to visit parents. And for this year, we've put our foot down and said, it's going to be the four of us at home.
Yeah.
And we are going to establish our own Christmas. But my wife and I both bring different Christmas traditions, things that we grew up with and that are sort of heartfelt and important. And so in some ways, what we're doing is we're importing both those and having a slight negotiation about, you know, about whether you're allowed bags and sacks under the Christmas tree or not, or whether you tastefully put presents under. My wife is amazing at wrapping Christmas presents. You have never seen such elaborate Christmas presents. Mm. So we go with that. But we're trying to sort of establish our own traditions, one of which is to go to the Bridge Inn at Topsham.
Yeah.
Christmas Day. Carols and a drink,
yep,
which is superb.
Well, it's Christmas is made better by music.
It is. Back to Causley.
Back to that Causley person.
But for me, Christmas is about chimneys, and this is something we've written about.
It is.
In the past, and in our show, we talk about this a little bit. We talk about children's letters that were found up chimneys. In our book, we have a section where we talk about the invention of Father Christmas.
Yeah.
But one of the things we don't mention is logs. And logs are a very important part of Christmas past.
I think we should write. I want to do a dedicated podcast on logs.
I think that would be good.
An introduction. Everyone, please get in touch and see if you've got any suggestions
about
logs. History
if you're
of
a
logs.
Tree surgeon or you're a lumberjack, I once met a father and brother who were lumberjacks in Alaska, and they sawed logs in the snow barefoot. It was like these sort of he-men from the north.
I'm going to write that down now. We're going to do logs.
Quite incredible.
Anyway, tell me about your Christmas logs.
So Christmas logs, there are two types of Christmas logs. There is the ashen faggot. and the ashen faggot is it's a log that you burn on the fire, and it's surrounded by a sort of, I suppose a faggot is a sort of bundle of sticks and twigs that then light. And I have the most wonderful,
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Description of this from Dorset and Somerset in Bentley's Magazine in 1847. On Christmas Eve, it is the custom in all the farmhouses of this neighbourhood to burn the ashen faggot. All the labourers and servants are invited, and a large fire is heaped up onto the wide hearth. We all sat round the hearth in a circle, the firelight deepening the shadows of the hard-featured mahogany countenances around and setting off the peculiarities of each form. The ashen faggot which lay on the hearth consists of a long, immense log of ash surrounded with smaller branches which are then bound to it with many withies, forming one large bundle. It filled the whole hearth. As it burned, the roaring in the large chimney was tremendous. As the fire slowly catches and consumes the withies, the sticks fly off and kindle into a sudden blaze, and as each one after the other gives way, all present stand up and shout with might and main, the loving cup of cider is handed round, and each drinks his fill. They then resume their seats, sing songs, and crack jokes till the bursting of another band and the kindling of a fresh blaze demands renewed shouts and another pull on the cider faggon. Isn't that a wonderful sort of description of a sort of communal Christmas?
Yep, and everything you need.
Everything you need. The other is a Yule log.
And that's different.
A Yule log is different. So it's different from an ashen faggot, which is sort of ash surrounded by you know, different branches. The Yule log is a Victorian tradition, and it went back even further than that, sort of 300 years or so ago. And it's the idea that you have a dedicated, special Christmas log that you would burn on the fire. And there are various sort of traditions that are associated with this. They come in different sizes. If you think about country houses, they would bring in basically half a tree and put it there. And there's one description of a country kitchen, and some of the flagstones are broken because, apparently, when they brought the horse and cart in to load the tree trunk onto the fire, this smashed the floor.
Okay.
So it remains. What's interesting about this is the superstitions that survive relating to it. The idea is that you need to burn it until it goes out. So you need to leave it going. Otherwise, it's bad luck. Also, there's tradition that you actually kept part of the log for next year. Because that way, you protected the house throughout the year from fire and from witchcraft. So it's all about superstition.
Yeah.
And then you use that to light next year's log.
Doesn't sound very Christian, does it?
It doesn't sound very Christian.
No, but that's the point. I think that's the point. It's got these deep roots in paganism and tradition and rituals.
But religion is such a complicated beast. And I think you know, traditional doctrinal religious beliefs can sit side by side, can coexist with superstitions.
Yeah, but being able to kind of look into things like logs really helps you unpick that. It makes the point extremely clear.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes. I think we should do splinters as well.
I'd love to do splinters.
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Would you prefer to have a splinter or shampoo in your eye?
Oh, God, that's difficult.
It is difficult. I think it's one of the most difficult questions.
Depends what kind of splinter.
Do you need one or the other?
Yeah, but it's a complex question. I would like to, being a historian, I need to unpack these kinds of things. It's like you asked me earlier on when I said, "Are you ready for Christmas?" You said, "Well, it depends what you mean by ready."
Yeah, I did.
For Christmas.
Okay, fine. So we'll come back to shampoo.
I think
and
maybe
splinters.
Shampoo, because I don't like splinters.
No, I don't like splinters.
I don't really like shampoo in my eye either.
No. Okay. I suppose that lighting a fire is also. It's a slightly ritualistic thing. I remember being on my knees in front of the fire, scrunching up paper and putting it in and, you know, making the little pyramid out of...
It's a lovely Christmas tradition, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got a real fire here, haven't
We've
you?
We've got a wood burner.
Wood burner.
So not really.
Well, that sort of
I want a really happens. Massive one. But I never Enough. Really thought that there were different types of fire that you could have. I like that a lot.
And in fact, taking fire out of the house was apparently bad luck at Christmas. So you couldn't let for that two-week period... You wouldn't let things go out of the house. And there's one tale, I've been reading a lot of folklore for this, and so folklorists capture a lot of sort of old, you know, country traditions. And there was one example of a neighbour who went round to try and borrow some fire, because he hadn't got any fire at home, before matches, needed to borrow some fire, and was refused because the
denied the fire.
Denied the fire.
Wow.
And in fact, to ask for the fire was to insult the person whose house he went to. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah. I wonder where that came from. That's
Yes.
That is extraordinary. I like this whole indoor-outdoor thing, and that's what it was
Ooh.
Made me think about this.
Ooh.
So I was watching a early version of Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol.
And one of my favourite
I was
Christmas
also pootling around the streets of Topsham the other night. Again, James and I seem to spend a great deal of our time in Topsham, even though we don't live there. a little village on the X Estuary.
Beautiful.
And this time of year, it becomes quite magical. And you've got a lot of Georgian and Victorian sash windows on narrow little streets. And I was there on a particularly cold night, and you could see the difference in the weather between the outside and the inside. Bear with me, but it's all to do with peeking in. It made me think that history was really linked to something that we've talked about recently, which is privacy.
Mm.
And if you think about the Christmas Carol, and you've got Scrooge himself being taken around, actually peering into windows
lovely,
and going into
lovely.
Houses, and
he's
sort of breaking down barriers between privacy. Some people are having a private moment, and he looks in on it. And there's something about that in Christmas, which I think's absolutely fascinating. It almost gives you a kind of a license to snoop. And I
Christmas is a license to snoop. I love that.
I admitted, I freely admit, I peeked in a couple of windows. And they were those little kind of square windows with a kind of, like a joke, frosted kind of crescent moon at the bottom. Like it had come out of a scene from Charles Dickens. And I wanted to come back to this quickly anyway and just read out a couple of bits from The Christmas Carol, which was written in 1843. Now, I think this whole idea about windows and snooping and peeking in is also to do with envy. Which is a theme that's really explored in A Christmas Carol. And to understand it, I think you need to realise that Dickens was born into a lower middle class family, sank into hardship. Dickens himself was forced to work in a boot blacking factory at a young age before he ever became, you know, this well-known author. Before that, he was a journalist. He was essentially, his life was committed to child labour. He worked with other child labourers and he was a child labourer. And the sort of visible discomfort of the working classes in the 1843s is something that he returns to again and again and again. Privation, what people have, what people don't have. Yep. And it's all done through the medium of looking through windows and peeking in.
Lovely.
It was cold, bleak, biting weather, foggy withal, and he could hear the people in the court outside go wheezing up and down, beating their hands upon their breasts and stamping their feet upon the pavement stones to warm them. The city clocks had only just gone three, but it was quite dark already. It had not been light all day, and candles were flaring in the windows of the neighbouring offices like ruddy smears upon the palpable brown air. The fog came pouring in at every chink and keyhole and was so dense without that although the court was of the narrowest, the houses opposite were mere phantoms. To see the dingy cloud come drooping down, obscuring everything, one might have thought that nature lived hard by and was brewing on a large scale. That's how Dickens sets the scenes. It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. But that tees you up. A gloom is really important. I've just been writing about darkness in World War II and what happens during the blackout. And I think we'll do a dedicated podcast on darkness and gloom.
I mean, that those sort of gloomy sides contrast with... It's a book I know quite well, and I read it every year for Christmas Carol. And it's contrasted with some of the sort of brighter scenes.
Yep.
So the Fezziwig's feast, for example, when the employer of a young Scrooge, you know, gets them all sort of, you know, to shut away, and then they have this wonderful sort of feast. Also, the when you meet the Ghost of Christmas Past for the first time, you know, the man is surrounded by opulent Christmas. Or when Scrooge goes to his nephew's on Christmas Day, and takes up the invite, that, you know, you've got the sort of glow of Christmas there. And then at the end, when you see Tiny Tim and everyone, they are doing their best to make the most out of what they have.
Yeah. There's a lovely sequence where he goes to see where some miners live.
Oh, yes.
A place where miners live who labour in the bowels of the earth, returned the spirit. But they know me, see. And he goes on to describe this scene of... Oh, that was fascinating. A light shone from the window of a hut, and swiftly they advanced towards it. Passing through the wall of mud and stone, they found a cheerful company assembled around a glowing fire. An old, old man and woman, with their children and their children's children, and another generation beyond that, all decked out gaily in their holiday attire. The old man, in a voice that seldom rose above the howling of the wind upon the barren waste, was singing them a Christmas song. It had been a very old song when he was a boy, and from time to time they all joined in the chorus. So surely as they raised their voices, the old man got quite blithe and loud, and so surely as they stopped, his vigour sank again. Comes back to what you were talking about the singing along as well and the joy. But it's something I think I wanted to talk about particularly because it was something that I noticed when I was in Topsham, and I think you'll all notice this. If you're out and about on the streets in the dark on your own, sort of transport yourself back to 1843 and Dickens writing this book, and please take my permission to peek into some houses. I think you're allowed to do it. To snoop. Christmas is a snooper's charter, and it's all to do with the history of windows and looking, which I love about it.
Excellent. Well, I think that's end of part one, don't you?
Yes, that's the end of our Christmas special part one. So James, where have we gone? What have we talked about?
Well, we've talked about logs.
Yes.
We've talked about singing, we've talked about snooping and windows, we've talked about the changes of Christmas past.
Yep.
We've talked about being ready for Christmas.
We have, haven't you?
There was one, I need to share this before we go.
Okay.
This is an annoying Christmas person. 2 weeks ago, I was picking my daughter up, my youngest daughter up from somewhere or other, and this mother was there, and she was talking to her obviously harassed friend. And she said to her friend, you know, have you done much Christmas shopping yet? And the friend sort of replied, oh, God, no, I'm so busy. And they said, oh, I'm taking my wheelie bin, my wheelie suitcase into town tomorrow to finish it. and the woman's face was like, oh, my God. So the next week we turn up, she says exactly the same thing. you know, to the woman and sort of says how brilliant she is and, you know, how she's so prepared for Christmas. And I'm almost done with wrapping everything as well. And this poor woman, I just looked at her. Anyway, that's an aside. Christmas, I needed to get that out.
The one-upmanship of Christmas preparations. Oh.
God.
Well, anyway, I'll tell you what, this has made me think dramatically differently about Christmas tonight. That's the point of what we're doing. I hope it has changed the way you all think about the present and the past and about Christmas. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes. It really, really helps. Subscribe to the podcast and tell all your friends. We're on Twitter. You can follow me at Dr. Sam Willis.
And you can follow me at James Daybell. And you can follow Histories of the Unexpected on at Unexpected Pod. You can also follow us on historiesoftheunexpected.com.
Yeah, all of our news of live shows and books and everything is on there. And we're very proud to be part of the excellent History Hit Network, home of Dan Snow's History Hit and other great shows. And that's it. We're going to come back with part two of Christmas. Bye.
Bye.